Good afternoon. It's a warm, sunny day on Tuesday at 5 o'clock. I'm in London, and up north in Scotland is my 50th guest on What Comes Next Live. And it's a great pleasure to have on with me Lisa Thompson of Purpose HR. Lisa can explain what she does and why she does it. But as a matter of intro, Lisa and I are, let's just say, highly participative members of Entrepreneurial Scotland. And we both leapt in early on in the pandemic to offer webinars and different forms of support to that network. And I had the great pleasure of collaborating with Lisa on a cohort post-program event. And it was just a lot of fun to work together, and I hope we get the chance to do it in the future. But as the name infers, Purpose HR, it's right up my street. I'm all about purpose-led leaders. So I'd love for Lisa to tell us a bit about herself, and we can have half an hour chat on what she wants to chat about, with, as always, the context around leadership of What Comes Next.
Sure. Cool. Well, thank you, Tom. Yeah, I would echo that. It was a great experience to get the chance to work with you and learn from you too. In terms of Purpose HR, we've been going for 7 years now. So I founded the business on the back of previously having set up and run HR people functions within a number of entrepreneurial and growing tech businesses. We essentially provide an outsourced HR people function to early stage and growth businesses prior to the stage that they need to hire their own in-house resource. And I've built my own team now as well, so I like to think I've got a bit of an affinity and an empathy with entrepreneurs too, because I've now got my own team of nine. Mm-hmm. And we work with some amazing, innovative, exciting companies. Don't know if you want to know more than that.
Well, I'm fascinated by the name, because it's clearly there is a gap in the development of companies where they're not big enough, particularly entrepreneurial early stage growth companies. They're not big enough to systemize themselves and put in a full management team.
Yeah.
Big enough to have their own HR function.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you've now got a team of nine. So, there's expanding demand, and that's really cool. So pretty soon you'll need your own HR function.
Probably me.
Probably me. Well, that's another conversation about growth and what the role of the CEO is.
Okay.
I guess what I'm intrigued by is not so much what you do, which is very cool, and anybody, you amply and readily demonstrate your desire to help businesses early stage and fast growth, but why you do it as opposed to what you do. I'm more interested in just from a selfish standpoint, your why.
Because, well, that's a great question. I think that there's two reasons. I mean, I've been quite lucky in that when I was starting out in my career and when I was setting up HR functions and businesses, I had the chance to work for some really amazing entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see them having an idea, building a team around it, you know, building a business and really achieving. And I thought, well, I was like that for myself too. But my role was always a kind of enabling function within their businesses. And I thought, what do I know that I could do that I could build a business myself? Because I'm quite entrepreneurial. And actually I thought, well, I could do what I do. I could do it as a service. And I could see the market. And I could see as well that I found it quite sad, actually, sometimes that businesses would, you know, as they were growing, they would invest early for obvious reasons in their finance and maybe their sales functions and their marketing. But people in HR and talent support was always quite far later down the line. And I think because of that, it often became a kind of reactive and often administrative function, when actually I could see the potential of investing in that early and, you know, unlocking the talent that you have in organisations and actually channeling that and really doing proactive strategies. So I thought, how could businesses access that in a better way? And that was probably my why in terms of setting up Purpose HR.
That's fantastic. And there's a level of why that goes beyond that, but there's a commercial vision. Enabling was what you were good at, so maybe I can do that. So enabling is a service. And then what you went on to talk about, I mean, I've, as you'd imagine, with the sort of roles I've played, I've worked with people functions a lot. And broadly, I don't have a high opinion of many HR leaders, even in multi-billion dollar companies, because often they are reactive, low risk, compliance based, goni no di that, as they might say.
And entrepreneurs don't like that. And it doesn't gel.
They'll say no first. So, you know, in different environments just in the last week, we're coming up against that again and again. And it's very understandable. And I have found it exceedingly rare, even at New York Stock Exchange and London Stock Exchange listed companies, for HR to be on truly in the C-suite, because they don't really think proactively, as opposed, in your language, proactively rather than reactively. And they're not thinking ahead. They're not looking at, development of talent. And I'd say it's even, if I get on a bit of a rant, we're going through a massively disruptive time in the global economy. And there will be a lot of suffering. There already is. There will also be a lot of creative destruction. There'll be a lot of change, and there'll be a lot of companies growing extremely fast. And the number one thing they need is a strong culture and a strong program around their people to attract, retain, and develop and grow their people. But that's broadly, that's whether in the UK, US, Canada, which are typically Caribbean, which are my typically places I've operated in, or else, it's not really seen as a function that sits anywhere, because HR will often drop back into that. HR people aren't bungee jumpers.
What does that mean?
they're not high risk.
And yeah, I mean, when you work, we often see that, because when you work with entrepreneurs, I think it's the entrepreneur's decision as to risk. And I guess there's a role to advise them mm-hmm. the potential risk and what that might mean. Mm. But in a way that respects their capacity and ownership to make decisions. And if you're overly bureaucratic, then or risk averse, then it's not actually helpful in the long term, and it can slow things down and inhibit growth.
So that I'm curious. I don't, on 50 shows, I don't talk at all about the business the person's in, but actually I'm kind of intrigued, and I think this will have value to viewers and listeners. So what you said there, I think is really important. The entrepreneurs, generally speaking, I think we'll both agree, tend to be very risk tolerant. They are bungee jumpers. Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn has the quite famous phrase, an entrepreneur is somebody who builds a plane while flying it.
Okay, I actually haven't heard that one.
But there is a spectrum of risk, and there's a spectrum of bravery, and it is their choice. But what you're saying, what I believe you're saying, is that it's up to the HR, people in the HR function, outsourced or in, to honor that. Right. And obviously you do have a compliance and risk role. But actually it's, you know, I imagine the last year was also an exciting test bed, because there'll be a lot of people who would go, okay, because a lot of the rules around COVID support in the UK were actually pretty unclear to begin with. And actually how you implemented furlough and how you implemented all of these things with employees. You know, what I've seen so much is people just going, well, we'll just, you know, one of the more recent ones for some larger companies is the risk of people being overseas.
Yeah.
And the potential tax implications. Mm-hmm. So some HR functions and some quite large businesses just said, you can have 30 days, then that's it. Mm-hmm. You now have to be back in the UK, because it's just, we can't take the risk. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with that is that a slightly more entrepreneurial company is going to get some really expert tax advice and find a way to be more flexible with their staff, and people will vote with their feet.
Yeah, and you have to listen to the staff as well to understand what do our people want, and how can we, I think it's about turning it on its head to say, how can we achieve this? What can we do? Rather than say no.
Okay. So if you were leading your team and you had a client who was entrepreneurial, fairly risk tolerant, says, I'd love to do this, would that be kind of the problem solving question you might ask your team?
Yeah, it's a problem-solving question. I mean, obviously there's ethical dimension. You've got to be appropriate. And we wouldn't breach our own values and ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about, well, understanding what does the business want to do, and how can we try and help that? How can we collaborate and partner to try and achieve that goal?
Okay, cool. Well, you're already set. If I had a business, I'd already be talking to you to get my outsourced HR.
It's not a pitch.
No. But I could ask you loads more questions for hours on end. But however, this is the platform for you. So what would you like to talk about?
Oh, well, I would love to talk more about, you know, leadership and culture. I think it's been very, very topical right throughout the pandemic, you know, increasingly aware and certainly in the last few weeks. You know, I guess I'd love to have a conversation and some more questions.
So start away. I'm here to listen and join in as appropriate.
Okay, I thought you were going to ask me questions.
So you said in recent weeks, leadership and culture. So what comes to mind?
Well, I think we connected online recently on a conversation over a well-known organisation that's had some challenges recently. And I think for me, what sparked a thought on is around culture is not a nice to have, but it's almost an essential. And you'd written a post recently, hadn't you, about the soft stuff is actually the hard stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, are you seeing, because what I'm starting to see is an awareness in leaders earlier in terms of the need to develop their skills.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you would echo? Or?
Mm-hmm. So so that's interesting to me, is that your focus is on early stage and growth companies.
Uh-huh.
And I would echo from my experience with working with them from a different angle is they typically won't engage in that until they're through several rounds of funding.
Yeah, because there's a perception around cost, or that it's
just investment,
or example. That it's just a fluffy. And actually, what I see is that the companies that do that earlier, it leads to better success because they build stronger teams, and they focus on the soft stuff as the hard stuff.
Well, thinking of recent weeks, and by the way, I got into a fanboy space because Tom Peters is one of the big management gurus, and he's way up in his 70s now, and he's quite active on Twitter. I've engaged with him a few times before, and off the back of me writing that post about soft stuff's the hard stuff, there's a Twitter conversation goes on, and another guy I know, David McWilliams, ends up inviting him to Kilconomics, right, which is my favorite festival. I'm going, all on Twitter, I'm going, oh, I did that. That's cool. But there's a very timely one happening in Scotland right now, which is a company that set itself out to be, and you're already nodding because you know who I'm going to talk about because it's top of the papers, but that set itself out to be, you know, a real punky ethos, and they were going to do things differently and not follow the trend. I saw a bit of a warning sign a couple of years ago when they basically sold a major stake to a private equity house. Right. And there's been some murmurings in the marketing and advertising industry about how they've handled people they work with. But now BrewDog, who are the sort of regarded as being stellar in terms of behaving morally, ethically, et cetera, they've had over 60 employees sign a letter saying it was a toxic culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my first thought to you around that would be, what did you think of the response from the two founders? I'm sure you read it.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because what I saw was one response, an initial response that was shared on Twitter, which had allegedly been drafted for employees to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a second stage response because there was a bit of a backlash to that because it got shared and published first. Then there was a follow-up response, which was a bit more, you know, from what I read, it was someone that said they were listening, said they were going to engage. But I think it's that, you know, that discussion about are we actively open to this conversation and are we responding because we want to engage and we agree and we want to change? Or is it that we feel that we're backed into a corner and that's all that we could say? And I think what I would say is I don't know that company. I don't work in that sector, and I'm not going to stand in judgment of anyone because that's not my style.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's opening a lot of, you know, difficult for them, but it's opening a lot of, I think, very valuable conversations
mm-hmm.
in businesses, which is important.
Well, what I would reflect to you is the way you responded to my question says a lot about you. Right. And your values and ethics. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, first of all, saying you're not going to stand in judgment and you're going to be open. Right. So, I'm as somebody who has a fair amount of experience in coaching. One of the keys to that is to, as far as humanly possible, be non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. And look to understand. I look at it as, you know, I've come up with this concept called open leadership, which is about being open, humble, brave, etc. And their responses they gave after, like a day or two after the thing broke, did appear to me to be humble and open. And but there is that piece which we'd always look at, with a piece of healthy skepticism as to, you know, were they pushed into the corner? And in another company I was a massive fan of and remain open to seeing what happens was Basecamp. And they had a massive implosion, right? And they had, you know, they're looked at as being real leaders in the world of work and particularly remote work and, you know, not having crazy, you know, overworked employees such as, you know, some companies publicly like Revolut or like that. And they still have that hard driving startup culture 7 or 8 years in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to be honest, I'm not sure I'd like to be part of a company like that, but if they're clear on that's who they are and people sign up for that, a bit like Goldman Sachs, then fine. But you know, you said a lot about yourself in how you responded to the question. And it makes me curious. It also saddens me that the 60 plus people got to the point where 60 plus people had to sign a letter.
Yeah.
But it also perhaps, you know, one of the things I've found, and you work with companies at the stage of growth that you do, and I had a little joke with you about you've got 9 staff, so who's going to run your HR? And you go, well, probably me. it would be like, just like I'd love it if they started teaching mindfulness in primary schools.
Mm-hmm.
And self-awareness and stuff like that. What would that do for the whole country?
Mm-hmm.
If soft skills, which are the hard skills, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as the way I think I put it when I blogged about it was, business is simple, people are complex.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be complicated to put a space shuttle out, but it's solvable.
Mm-hmm.
It's physics. But you can't solve the human race. You can only ever practice, like yoga masters are still practicing. You can ever practice. And the sooner you start practicing, the sooner your practice can produce some degree of mastery with a small m.
Yeah. So
I would hope that the clearly brilliant founders of BrewDog who are still there leading the company years on and haven't handed over control of it to other people, which is a separate issue. And it is an issue of companies. Perhaps they will get that humility, which does lead me onto a slightly different thought. It's one of my past guests, might be worth checking in on for listeners. There's a guy called Tom Nixon, who was a startup founder and now helps startup founders.
Okay.
He's written a book called Source, because he believes there is a different role between the source of a company and the chief executive of a company.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have a very powerful source energy around your business to me, and you could, at any point in time, choose to step away from your business should you have the right people to run it. His point is, if the source steps away, some of that drive, energy, purpose sometimes goes away. So it's to recognize that the person who might be the source and the CEO at the beginning, so that's the word source doesn't sit on any org chart, but it's really quite a fascinating idea.
It's not a word that I've used before, but I absolutely get what you mean by that. And I think it's that the idea and the drive and the, you know, what is the ethos of this? But it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to do everything yourself. And I would argue that if you do, you know, remember I'm in the outsourcing business, if you do, there's a big opportunity cost to that as well. And who's the best place to do that task at the time? But it's a good challenge that you give me, because I have recently, at the start of this year, we brought in a business operations manager. And that's an investment for our business, but it was a fantastic decision, and it's freed up my time to do great things like this, for example, you know, and to, you know, coach me to step away from the day-to-day delivery for clients, for example, and actually leading and growing the team. And we've ramped up our growth in that period. So, you know, it's a very, very good point.
Cool. And so when you're, I think a key point you're looking to make around leadership is that the earlier founders and leaders of early stage businesses invest in people skills, people culture, the better. From your now quite vast experience of this over the last number of years, what tips, you know, where would they start?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is if so often we work with a business and what they'll do is they'll think, well, we're going to raise X amount of funding, this is an org chart, and these are the different roles, and there's these titles, and these are things that we have to bring in, people that we need to bring in. And I challenge them. So I say, well, let's go back, let's look at your organization to think, actually, what are the things you need to achieve in your business? And let's put job titles to the side, because actually at that stage, they really don't matter. What are the skills that you already have? And that piece starts to get people to think, to be self-aware about, what are your gaps? What do you need to bring around you? Let's think creatively about that. How do you need to do that? You do not necessarily need to hire a chief marketing officer just because other businesses have. How can you do that flexibly? Is there people that have those skills already that you can do pieces? Can you do that in a way? And then what is the different inflection points and stages of growth? And how can you build a plan around that? Rather than define titles and hire against that and bring in people that work in, you know, maybe silos too early.
Well, yeah, that makes total sense to me, and also echoes models that the company I used to work with developed to help growth companies. You know, at what stage in growth, what inflection points, when do you move this person in, etc., based upon their needs. And there's models and there's numbers and there's rationale and there's logic around that. I'm not seeing yet, I'm not feeling clear yet from you as to where that is the same thing as investing in leadership and culture.
Well, I think it's about that self-awareness piece.
Okay.
Because that's the point where we need to think about, well, I'm going to have to lead this team and I'm going to grow this team. Okay. But what am I best placed to do and what are others best placed to do as well? And then also, once you've done that, what you have to really focus on is, okay, why would they want to join my team? What am I going to offer them? Because that's stage two, isn't it? You've got to define what you need and where you're going, and then you've got to actually attract those people. And that's where you have to define what's the proposition, what's the value. Why would they want to come and follow me?
So that's okay. So if I look to reframe that just slightly, it's a little bit of taking the ego out of the founder and leader.
Do you know, sometimes it isn't it? I challenge people in a very gentle way, but I'll say to them, well, nobody's heard of your business. Why are you going to attract these people to join you? You probably don't have the budget compared to some of these larger, you know, corporates and things. Actually, and then that's when we actually get to, well, what's the purpose? What do you do? What problems do you solve? How do you make the world better? You know, what's the attraction for people to come to your business? And then you build it out from there. And a lot of that's not just about what you do or, you know, getting excited about the product or the tech. It's actually about starting to think about the culture and why would they want to be there? What's in it for them too?
Well, I can see, this is really cool. Because this is the talent attraction piece, right? The people attraction piece. And, you know, word travels. One of the things I often work with people in a slightly different direction is I'll work with people on the purpose of the company, who you are, because that's your brand, right? Yeah. And then I might get into talking to them about their positioning, like, okay, so what do you offer and how do you represent that to the outside world with your website, et cetera, et cetera. What would be very cool would be to, if more people were like you and said, okay, let me look at that through a people lens and say, you know, not many people have heard of you and you need to attract both customers, which is the brand positioning side, and people. The bit where I was talking about the ego coming out was, or being removed at all, is what does the business need? Right. And then fitting the people to it, because as we know, one of the common things that can be problematic, even sometimes when businesses are up to the tens of thousands, is fitting the role to the person. Rather than the person to the role.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm working with an HR leader internationally right now who's just doing a brilliant job of building they call it a different language, so I'll use different words to keep it anonymous, but they keep talking about a career development scale. All right. We're using both soft and hard measures. Okay. And then saying what does that, the role that's currently on the org chart, what career development scale level does that need? Mm-hmm. And then finding where there are gaps where somebody is actually can be assessed at a level. Maybe they're two levels below the level of the job they're in, and they're going, mm-hmm. Well, how do we help develop you? And then,
yeah.
And then how do we cross that? And fundamentally, that's a method of saying, what does the business need?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they do have soft skill measures in there.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's got to work both ways. And I think talent now, even compared to when I started the business 7 years ago, I think people coming into businesses are more demanding now in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, what can you offer me? Where am I going? What's next? So they understand that the business, you know, will select them and need them, but they're also pushing for, you know, the next level. And I think that's a generational thing as well.
So basically, all the clients that are working with you need to think, and I am pitching for you, and not just for you, but I'm telling them what they need to do in general, need to think way beyond the box ticking aspects of HR. And there's significant legal and compliance issues towards it. But it's far more than somebody who makes sure you're compliant.
Yes, absolutely.
It's whatever that budget is, at least double it, and the other half is going to be building the asset of your business. So if you think it in commercial terms, it's building the asset of your business around your culture, your values, your ethics, who you are, and how's that going to attract and also retain people.
Absolutely. Because
I think the evidence would be there that 60 plus employees at a reasonably large SME, but they're still an SME in that beer company,
mm-hmm.
is a problem, right? Yeah. And it means that they fundamentally have not invested sufficiently in this.
Yeah.
That's an evidential statement, I believe. So they're a bit of a learning experience that the earlier, just like primary schools of mindfulness, the earlier you invest. And I look at it as an investment, not a cost. It's an investment in the future of your company.
Absolutely.
But it is tough. I mean, you know, if I turn around to early stage companies and go, okay, hire a coach, right? They're going to go, how much is that? And they're going to go, how much is that going to cost me? And they're going to go, no, I need more money for coders. It's like, fair enough. Call me when you're ready. it's not a space I work in for that and other reasons. But,
yeah, and I think that's in the early stage market, there's that balance of not just saying, I'm going to tell you what to do, I'm actually going to be hands-on and help you do it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which is not what a coach does.
No. And,
it's very different.
No, not at all. So I think a very simple message is focus on your leadership and culture as early as you can and invest in it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think I read recently that now that, you know, we're sort of moving out of the pandemic in some ways, people that stayed in jobs for a period, we're now seeing quite a lot of churn and transition. So there's a lot more people looking to move on from businesses, even businesses that have invested in their culture. So, you know, organisations really need to be listening to their people and, you know, spotting that early and planning for it.
I'll drop in a last thought and ask your opinion, and then I'll let you finish off. Something occurred to me that today, going for a walk outdoors with a client, is that their opinion was that the Chancellor should have cut the business funding, except for select sectors, by now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not actually at the point where it's helping. So certain sectors, hospitality, events could have been supported, airlines, but otherwise cut it and let's just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, them expressing that from a particular angle, what I was thinking about was how exhausting it is to be in a company that knows that the second that funding, particularly the staff funding, gets cut, they're going to do retrenchments and reorganizations.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of people who might have been just asked to carry on as they're doing, but do 50% or double the work, sometimes given pay rises or promotions while others are sitting at home furloughed.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in the early stage of the furlough, which is to me terribly badly designed, but at least now you can blend it a bit. But there's an exhaustion sitting in a lot of companies right now.
Well, people are stagnating.
Waiting for that zombie company holding pattern to be finished. And some companies that will make it through, but they're ready to activate a restructuring plan, but they can't until September.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very exhausting summer for a lot of people who are going to work, whether they're physically going in or working remotely.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a reflection on that. So it's an important part of leadership to paint the picture of the future and just sometimes just say to people, I know it's hard.
Put yourself in the shoes of those people, would say as well. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. So I just was a random people-oriented thought and just that feeling that, like, you know, how many leaders actually recognize it for their teams, how difficult it is to manage a team through this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you're just told, for example, until we know how it shakes out after the restructuring, there's no more budget.
Yeah.
For example. So I'll let you just close off with your thoughts and wisdom and anything you'd like on this sunny day.
Sure. Well, it's been lovely speaking with you, and you've got me thinking as well. And I think that whole piece about self-awareness and leaders and actually investing in these things, it pays off in the long run. Because it's the balance against dealing with lots of problems later if you haven't been, like we talked about, proactive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's been a shift already. I think over COVID, more and more organisations are investing in wellbeing,
mm-hmm.
Investing in understanding, you know, the support that they need to wrap around their people. We've seen that. We've seen a ramp up in growth. We've been very privileged in that sense. Mm-hmm. So I think after the pandemic, I hope that continues and it just doesn't slip backwards because people are the lifeblood of organisations.
People are the lifeblood of organisations. A great reminder of something simple and powerful. Thank you very much for being my 50th guest, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much for having me.